de hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Novak. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on today's program, Brian Lynn has a story about possible ice volcanoes on Pluto. Ana Mateo brings us this week's words and their stories. Dan Friedel and Faith Perlow have a story on standardized tests for this week's education report. I will return with Katie Weaver for a story on housing in Mumbai, India. And finally, John Russell reports on how methane gas could be a sign of alien life. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Scientists from the American Space Agency, NASA, say they have found evidence of large ice volcanoes on the dwarf planet Pluto. The finding is based on images and data collected by NASA's New Horizons spacecraft. Researchers report in a new study that they identified numerous round-shaped formations on Pluto's surface. The formations suggest the presence of geological activity linked to ice volcanoes, also called cryovolcanoes. The scientists said it is the first time these kinds of structures have been observed in our solar system. Some measured at least 7 kilometers tall and 100 kilometers wide. The particular structures we studied are unique to Pluto, at least so far, planetary scientist Kelsey Singer said in a statement. She is a member of the New Horizons team, based at the Southwest Research Institute in Boulder, Colorado. She was the lead writer of the study, which recently appeared in Nature Communications. Singer said it is difficult to know exactly when the ice volcanoes formed, but the team believes the volcanoes could be as young as a few hundred million years, or even younger. It is possible that these processes are going on even in the present day, Singer added. Like Earth and our solar system's other planets, Pluto formed about 4.5 billion years ago. It is smaller than Earth's moon and orbits about 5.8 billion kilometers from the Sun. That distance is about 40 times farther than Earth's orbit. Pluto's surface includes flat land, mountains, craters, and valleys. The researchers studied an area southwest of Sputnik Planitia, a large heart-shaped area filled with nitrogen ice. One of the tallest structures, called Right Mons, may have formed when several volcanic formations came together, the team said. Right Mons is similar in size to Hawaii's large Mauna Loa volcano, although it is shaped differently. The researchers said Pluto is geologically active. There is evidence of flowing nitrogen ice glaciers. In addition, the dwarf planet has areas where nitrogen ice vaporizes during the day and turns back into ice at night. Lene Quick is a planetary scientist who specializes in ice volcanoes at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland. She said the findings were extremely significant. Quick told the French press agency AFP that scientists believed Pluto should have lost much of its inside heat a long time ago. The new research, however, suggests it was able to hold on to enough energy to facilitate widespread geological activity rather late in its history, she said. Quick added that the findings may help scientists re-examine the possibility that similar volcanic activity might have happened on other small, icy worlds far away from the sun. I'm Brian Lynn.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. On this program, we explore words and expressions in the English language. The natural world gives us many of our expressions, from weather to animals to plant life. Today, we talk about a kind of flower. Daisies are big, bright, happy-looking flowers. They stand upright on strong stems. So, if we describe someone as being fresh as a daisy, we mean they seem well-rested and full of energy. We often say we are fresh as a daisy after resting or getting cleaned up. Here is an example. After an all-day hike, I was very tired. But after a shower and short rest, I felt fresh as a daisy and ready for the next activity. Looking fresh as a daisy can also describe a place or room that is clean and orderly. For example, after the man cleaned and painted his kitchen, it looked fresh as a daisy. When a child is learning to walk, they often fall. To encourage them to stand up and try again, we might say, upsy-daisy. We also might say upsy-daisy when we lift a child up. It just sounds cute. Upsy-daisy. Speaking of children, a popular activity with some is to connect flowers together, like a chain, and wear them. Because of their strong stems, daisies are commonly used to make daisy chains. A daisy chain can mean any connected events, experiences, happenings, or things. A daisy chain is also used to describe electrical signals that are connected in a system. Sometimes this can be used as a verb. When the internet went down, I had to daisy chain my phone to a friend's computer to share some videos. There is also a strange way we use the flower daisy. If someone is pushing up daisies, they are, unfortunately, dead and buried. This comes from the fact that wildflowers often grow on top of graves. We may use daisies for this expression because they grow easily and wildly in nature. It is important to know that we only use this expression informally. Sometimes we use it as a joke. For example, I'll be pushing up daisies before a time travel machine is invented. And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
The Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, recently announced the SAT and ACT standardized tests will once again be required for students seeking admission starting next school year. That is a change from the last 2 years, as MIT and thousands of other colleges and universities decided to give students the choice to send their scores. That is because testing centers closed in 2020 due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Many schools say they will continue the policy for at least a while. A group that opposes testing, called Fair Test, noted last autumn that over 1,800 colleges and universities were test optional this year. Even before the pandemic, the University of Chicago made test scores optional. In fact, both the University of California and California State University, Cal State, took it one step further. They removed the test requirement. The two university groups manage over 30 colleges and universities in California and teach about 700,000 students each year. In announcing the decision in March, the top Cal State leader, Steve Relyea, known as the Chancellor, said the move will level the playing field and permit more students to get a high-quality degree. Bob Schaefer is the leader of Fair Test. He said many universities in the U.S. will soon follow California's lead. He called the movement to eliminate tests no accident.
However, MIT, one of the highest-rated schools in the U.S., is going against this movement. Stu Schmill is MIT's head of admissions. In a message on the school's website, Schmill said the SAT and ACT give the school a way to judge whether students are ready for MIT. In addition, he noted the tests help MIT find students who are able to succeed but may have come from high schools that are not able to teach advanced coursework. In a conversation with MIT's news service, Schmill said test scores, especially in math, permit the school to predict a student's performance. He did say, however, that MIT is not looking for students with perfect scores. But the scores are an important extra piece of information. Critics of standardized tests say wealthy students have an advantage and do better than poor students. Wealthy schools often have advisors who help students learn the tests. Both the California universities noted this criticism as a reason to eliminate the tests. Schmill, however, said the SAT is a good way for the MIT admissions department to see that a student is prepared for college, even if they have not taken the hardest science and math classes.
Tiffany Blessing is an advisor for IvyWise, a company in New York that helps students think about colleges. She is a past assistant director of admissions at MIT. Blessing said the MIT decision will not affect most students who were already planning to apply. In general, she said, students plan on taking standardized tests and use the test optional choice when the test scores do not turn out to be the way they intended. Blessing said the decision will help international students show they are comfortable with a test in English and an American style of evaluation.
It helps a college or university understand just how strong an A might be in a situation where almost everyone in the applicant pool has A's.
Blessing also noted that students who are thinking about going to MIT will also send in other scores. American students will send in advanced placement test scores, and international students will send in scores from their own countries. For a student from Great Britain, for example, MIT will look at scores from A-level exams and IGCSE tests in different subjects. Schmill said the test is a tool, and the school will make changes if better tools become available. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Faith Perlow.
For Shailush Combly, a childhood dream is about to become reality. The 40-year-old Indian man lives in a 15-square-meter, one-room home in India's financial capital, Mumbai. It would not be too small if he lived alone. But Combly's parents, brother, and his brother's wife all live there too. Combly represents the third generation of his family to live in the small, crowded home contained in an old building in much disrepair. He said he always dreamed of living in a modern building. Whenever I went out, I wanted to own a house, however tiny, in one of these buildings, Combly recalls. I even told my uncle that one day I will live in such a place.
Thousands of other Indian families live in similar spaces in an area of Mumbai called BDD Chawls. The 37-hectare area is dense with people and with tenements that were built about 100 years ago. Real estate in the area, however, is among the costliest in the world. All around the BDD Chawls, business and residential development has expanded quickly in recent years. Mumbai is home to more than 20 million people. Now, Combly and others dreaming of new, better homes have a chance to see that dream come true. Under a massive $2 billion redevelopment project, the 16,000 tenements, like the one Cambly lives in, will be destroyed and replaced with modern high-rise buildings. The project is part of major plans that Mumbai has long sought with limited success: to clear costly land of old damaged buildings and replace them with tall buildings that include homes, offices, and large market centers. Some city planners, however, have raised concerns about the project and the pressure it could add to the city's weak infrastructure.
Britain built the BDD Chawls during its colonial rule of India. It needed the rooms to house migrant cotton mill workers. Inside most homes, a large cloth piece separates the counter at one end that serves as a kitchen from the rest of the space that serves as both a bedroom and a living room. Televisions are put over the bed or in a corner. Two bathrooms serve 20 rooms. The occupants pay the government a small amount every month for the homes. Older people often spend their day in the long passageway that leads to the rooms or just outside on the grounds. They hang their wash to dry or look after children when their parents go to work. There is a sense of community in the tenements, some residents say. Lately, some residents have been visiting a model home in a nearby building to get an idea of what the future may look like for them. "I don't know when my turn will come. It may still take years," said 55-year-old Bhagwan Sawant. He pointed to the kitchen and other parts of the model home. "It will be great to have a modern home," he said. The new complexes will also have a hospital, schools, and activity centers for sports. The work has started on the first building, and it will be ready in 3 years, said Prashant Datrak, the top engineer of the project.
It took more than 20 years to launch the project after it was first proposed. Some experts are warning that the huge project is moving too fast. Redevelopment is necessary, but rebuilding has to be done in a sustainable and environmentally friendly manner, said Sulakshana Mahajan. She was a member of the former Mumbai Transformation Support Unit, a state government policy group set up in 2005. It was involved in earlier proposals for the redevelopment of the tenements and shut down in 2019. She said the early plans did not aim to increase density, but to better house the existing residents. "That is no longer the case," she said. "Open spaces available per person will be drastically shrunk, and distance between buildings is too little," Mahajan said. She argued that the project could create too much demand on city services, such as water supply, waste removal, and transportation. In the BDD Chawls, most residents are more happy about the project than they are worried about it. There is a growing sense, however, that the redevelopment will end the communal way of life they have now. "Here, I never have to worry about my mother. All of us work, but know that someone will look after her if she is unwell," said Cambly. But when they close the door of their new home, he added, "no one will know what is happening inside." I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Dan Novak.
Researchers recently said methane may be the first detectable sign of life outside of our planet. But the gas would only suggest the presence of life if discovered in the atmosphere of a rocky planet orbiting in the habitable zone. This area is neither too hot nor too cold for liquid water to exist. Scientists are working to understand the signs of life, known as biosignatures, that might be present in observations of planets in other solar systems. The researchers, in a study published in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, showed that atmospheric methane, in the correct amount, could be a sign of life if other conditions are met. Methane is an important trace gas in Earth's atmosphere, at less than 2 parts per million by volume. Unlike other possible biosignatures, such as atmospheric oxygen, methane is one of the few gases that could be detected by using the James Webb Space Telescope. The telescope was launched by NASA in December and is due to become operational within months. Study lead author Maggie Thompson, a graduate student at the University of California, Santa Cruz, said, "On Earth, the majority of methane is produced by life. Most of the methane is created directly by life. Methane-producing microbes in wetlands, rice fields, or in the digestive system of large animals. Methane is also produced through human activities, such as burning fossil fuels, including coal and oil, which are the remains of dead organisms." The researchers made a 3-part case for methane as a possible biosignature. First, it would be unsurprising for life elsewhere to produce methane, study co-writer Joshua Christensen-Totten said. Secondly, methane would not last for long in atmospheres of habitable rocky planets without constant replenishment, possibly by living organisms, the researchers said. Thirdly, they added, it would be difficult for other processes, such as chemical reactions, to maintain replenishment without leaving behind some kind of evidence. This evidence would suggest the methane was not biologically produced. Gas-spewing volcanoes, for instance, would release carbon monoxide alongside methane. But biological activity generally reduces carbon monoxide's atmospheric concentrations. Thus, the researchers explained, non-biological processes cannot easily produce rocky planet atmospheres rich in both methane and carbon dioxide, as on Earth, but with little or no carbon monoxide. Scientists are expecting greater insight into exoplanet atmospheres using Webb and other new telescopes. Oxygen, more plentiful in Earth's atmosphere than methane, is another possible biosignature. It is fed into Earth's atmosphere by biological processes, in this case, photosynthesis by plants and microbes. But oxygen could be difficult for Webb to detect. Christensen-Totten explained that it's important to note that the diversity of planetary environments elsewhere is probably very large. He added, there could be other methane-making processes that no one has yet considered. I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Dan Novak.